Intermodal shipping containers were corrugated metal boxes. They could be easily swapped between different modes of transport, like ships or railroad flat cars or semi-trucks, hence intermodal. They were all a little more than 8 feet high and 8 feet wide. The shortest and rarest were 20 feet long. Most were 40 feet long, or 45, or 48, or 53. But traffic was always measured by reference to the basic minimum length, in multiples called 20-foot equivalent units, or TEUs. A 20-foot container was scored as a 1, a 40-foot as a 2, and so on. Port Metro Vancouver handled 2 million TEUs a year. The Duncan shipment came in a 20-foot container, the smallest available, 1 TEU. Gross weight was 6,110 pounds, and net weight was 4,850 pounds, which meant that there were 1,260 pounds of cargo inside, in a space designed to handle more than 60,000. In other words, the box was about 98% empty. But that proposition was not as wasteful or as inefficient as it first appeared. Each of the pounds that the container carried was worth more than gold. It was lifted off a South Korean ship by a gantry crane, and it was placed gently on Canadian soil, and then it was immediately picked up again by another crane, which shuttled it to an inspection site where a camera read its BIC code. BIC was the Bureau International des Containers, which was headquartered in Paris, France. And the code was a combination of 4 letters from the Latin alphabet and 7 numbers. Together, they told Port Metro Vancouver's computers who owned the container and where it had come from and what was in it, and that those contents had been pre-cleared by Canadian customs, none of which information was in the least little bit true. The code also told the computers where the container was going and when, which was true. To a limited extent. It was going onward into the interior of Canada, and it was to be loaded immediately, without delay, onto a semi-truck that was already waiting for it. So it was shuttled on ahead, through a sniffer designed to detect smuggled nuclear material, a test that it passed very easily, and then out to the marshalling yard. At that point, the port computers generated an automatic text message to the waiting driver, who fired up his truck and swung into position. The container was lowered onto his flatbed and clamped down. A minute later, it was rolling. And 10 minutes after that, it was through the port gates, heading east, sitting high and proud and alone on a trailer more than twice its length, its minimal weight barely noticed by the roaring diesel. Reacher walked on through the dirt, another 100 yards, and then he stopped and turned a full circle and checked all around. There was no activity ahead of him, nothing to the west, nothing to the east, just flat, empty land. But behind him, way far to the south, there was a truck, maybe a mile away, maybe more. It was driving across the fields, bumping and lurching and pattering across the rough ground, faint light glinting off its dull chrome bumper. Chapter 20. Reacher dropped into a crouch. He was dressed in olive and brown and tan, and the acres of winter dirt all around him were olive and brown and tan, too, decomposing stalks and leaves, lumps of fertile earth, some of them cracked and powdered by frosts and winds. There was still mist in the air. It hung motionless and invisible, an atmospheric layer like the finest gauze. The truck a mile to the south kept on moving. The field was immense and rectangular, and the truck was roughly in the middle of it. It was following an endless series of S-shaped curves, steering sequentially, half left, then straight ahead, then half right, then straight ahead, then half left. Rhythmic and regular and relentless, the driver's view sweeping the horizon like a searchlight beam. Reacher stayed down in his crouch. Static targets attract the eye much less than moving targets. But he knew that sooner or later the truck was going to get close to him. That was inevitable. At some point, he was going to have to move on. But where? There was no natural cover. No hills, no woods, no streams, no rivers, nothing at all. And he was a slow runner, and not very agile. Not that anyone was fast enough or agile enough to win a game of man versus truck on flat and infinitely spacious land. The truck kept on coming, tiny in the distance, slow and patient and methodical, half left, straight ahead, half right. Its half right turns aimed it directly at him. Now, it was about 1,000 yards away. He couldn't make out the driver. Therefore, in return, the driver couldn't make him out. Not yet, anyway. But it was only a matter of time. It would be at a distance of about 200 yards, he figured, when his vague, crouching shape resolved itself. Maybe 150, if the windshield was grimy. Maybe 100, if the driver was short-sighted or bored or lazy. Then there would be a blank moment of dawning realization, and then there would be acceleration. Maximum speed over the rough ground would be about 30 miles an hour, somewhere between 7 and 15 seconds, he figured, between launch and arrival. Not enough. Better to go sooner than later. But where? He turned around, slow and cautious. Nothing to the east. Nothing to the west. But 300 yards due north was the bramble thicket he had noted before, the second such thing he had seen within a 2-mile span, a tangle of chest-high bushes, a miniature grove, wild raspberries or wild roses, bare and dormant, thick and dense with thorns, spared by the plows. The first had been spared because of a large rock in its center. There was no possible reason for the second to be any different. No farmer on earth would spare wildflowers year after year through 100 seasons just for sentiment alone. The thicket was the place to go. 300 yards for Reacher. Slow as he was, maybe 60 seconds. 1,000 yards for the truck. Fast as it was, maybe 70 seconds. A 10-second margin. No-brainer. Reacher ran. He came up out of his crouch and started pounding away, stiff, clumsy strides, arms pumping, mouth open, breathing hard. 10 yards. 20. Then 30. Then 40. Then 50. Far behind him, he heard the sudden, muffled roar of an engine. He didn't look back, just kept on going, slipping and sliding, feeling painfully slow. 200 yards to go. He kept on running, maximum speed. He heard the truck behind him all the way, still muffled, still comfortably distant, but moving fast. Revving motor, whistling belt, sucking air, juddering springs, pattering tires. 100 yards to go. He risked a glance back. Clearly the truck had gotten a late jump. It was still farther away than it might have been, but even so it was gaining handily. It was coming on fast. It was an SUV, not a pickup. Domestic, not foreign. GMC, maybe. Dark red, not new. A high, blunt snout and a chrome bumper the size of a bathtub. 50 yards to go. 10 seconds. He stopped 20 yards out and turned in place. Faced south. He stood still, panting hard. He raised his arms level with his shoulders. Come and get me.